Masechet Sanhedrin, Perek Aleph, Mishnah Vav. Here we're going to show the sources for the number of judges who sit on the great Sanhedrin and also for the lower Sanhedrin. Mishnah says, Sanhedre Gedola Hayeta Shel Shivim Ve'ehad, the great Sanhedrin had 71 judges, Uktana Shel Esrim Ushlosha, and the lower Sanhedrin would have 23 judges. How do we know that the great Sanhedrin had 71 judges? Answers the Mishnah, Shene Emar, Esfali Shivim Ish Mizikne Israel. The Pasuk says, Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu, gather me 70 men from the elders of Israel, and that is going to be the great Sanhedrin of the times of Moshe Rabbeinu, the 70 elders. Umoshe Al Gabehen, and Moshe was over them. We learn from the Pasuk over there where it says, Venaseu itecha, that they'll carry the burden with you. So we see that Moshe was with the 70, and that equals 71. Hare Shivim Vehad, and then we see there are 71 judges in the great Sanhedrin, 70 plus Moshe Rabbeinu. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Shivim. Rabbi Yehuda argues, he says, no, there was only 70 judges, not 71. Moshe was not included in that Sanhedrin. He learns out from that pasuk, v'naseu itecha, that they'll carry with you, that those judges have to be similar to Moshe Rabbeinu, they have to be on a high spiritual level in order to be appointed to the Sanhedrin. U'minayin laketana shehi shel esrim u'shlosha. From where do we know that the lower Sanhedrin has to be 23 judges? Shene emar v'shafetu ha'eda v'hitzilu ha'eda. In the pesukim that talk about somebody who was accused of murder, the pasuk says that either the person is put to death, and that is v'shafetu ha'eda, that they'll judge, or that he's found to be innocent, and that is v'hitzilu ha'eda. They're going to, the congregation, the eda, will save him. So we have this word eda over here twice. V'shafetu ha'eda, v'hitzilu ha'eda. So we learn out from here that there are two congregations, two times the word Eda. Eda Shofetet ve'Eda Matzelet. There's a group who convicts the defendant, who judges the defendant and says that he's guilty. And there's also an Eda, a group, a congregation that saves, where they say that a person was innocent. And we know that the word Eda always means 10 men, like we're going to demonstrate momentarily. Hare kan esrim. So we have 20 judges over here. The Eda plus Eda, 10 plus 10 equals 20. We're going to take a brief pause to understand where do we get the word Eda. How do we find that it means 20? Before we get to the 23 number that we're looking for to show us Sanhedre Ketana, we're going to prove that the word Eda means 10. Uminayin le'eda shehi asara. Where do we learn out that the word Eda means 10. Shene emar ad mataila eda hara'a hazot. We say in the pasuk, when talking about the 12 spies who went to Eretz Israel and they gave negative reports about Eretz Israel, that we call them a eda ra'a. We call them an evil group. So there were 12 spies and we're calling them an evil group, and we know that there are two of those spies, Yatzu Yehoshua veKalev, Yehoshua and Kalev, were excluded from that category. They weren't evil. They were the two people who spoke positively about Israel. So 12 spies minus Yehoshua and Kalev, you have 10 left. So we see the pasuk is calling them an Eda, which are 10 spies. So Eda means 10. So that's how we have 20. Now we'll find a way, how do we get to the final three judges to equal 23? U'minayin lahavi od shelosha. Where do we learn out that we add three more judges to the 20? To have a total of 23. Mimashma shne'emar lo tie ahare rabim lera'ot. We learn it out from the pasuk where it says we don't follow a majority to harm somebody, which means that a simple majority of the judges saying that somebody is guilty is not enough to say that that person is guilty. Shomea ani she'ehye imahem letova. But I could learn out from here that maybe I can't learn out that they're guilty from a simple majority, but I could learn out that I could benefit the person by a majority to say that he's not guilty. Im ken lama ne'emar ahare rabim lahatot. If that's true, that I could learn out that a majority is enough to say that somebody is innocent, why do I need the continuation of the pasuk where it says that we have to follow the majority? What's that pasuk referring to? It can't mean that a majority is enough to say that we find somebody innocent, because we already imply, we already deduce that law from the first part of the pasuk. From the fact that the first part of the pasuk says that we don't find somebody guilty by a simple majority. Ah, so we could find them innocent by a simple majority. So what is the pasuk over here, Ahare Rabbi Mahatot, coming to teach me? Lo ke hatayat techa letova, hatayat techa lera'a. So we learn out the decision to benefit somebody is not going to be the same as us trying to harm them. The way we say that they're innocent is different than the way that we say that they're guilty. Hatayatecha letova al pi edehad. The decision to find them innocent, to benefit them, could be made even by one judge, a simple majority. One more is enough to say that he's acquitted. Hatayatecha lera'a al pi shenayim. But the decision to make somebody guilty has to be made by not a simple majority of one, but by a majority of at least two more judges than are saying are innocent. So we learn out from here that there are 22 judges necessary, because we said there may be 10 judges who want to say that somebody's innocent, and 12 judges to say that somebody's guilty, because you need to have two more, and we need to keep as a constant, these two times we say the word edah. There's an edah that says innocent, and there's an edah that says guilty. So that's at least 10 on each. So 10 on each, 10 on each. And we said you need to have two more at least to say that somebody is guilty. So there's 12 that are saying that somebody is guilty. So we have 22. Ve'en bet din shakul. And there's a law, you can't have a bet din that is an even number of judges, because then you can end up with a tie. So therefore, mosifin alehin od ehad, we add one more judge to them for an equal of 23. Harekan esrimu shlosha. We have a total of 23 judges on the Sanhedrin Ketana. We mentioned in the last Mishnah that every single town in Eretz Yisrael has a lower Sanhedrin. Here the Mishnah is going to talk about how big a town must be in order to insist, to require that it has a Sanhedrin. Bekama yehe ba'ir utehere uyala Sanhedrin. How many people have to be in the city in order for it to qualify and to make sure that it has a lower Sanhedrin? Me'a ve'esrim, 120 people. 120 people are the minimum that the town has to have in order to obligate them to appoint a great Sanhedrin. Rabbi Nehemiah omed matayim u'shloshim. Rabbi Nehemiah disagrees. He says, no, if it's only that smaller type of town of 120, you don't need a small Sanhedrin for them. The minimum number of people in the town that you need a small Sanhedrin for is matayim u'shloshim, 230 people, so that each one of the 23 judges could lead at least 10 of those people who are living in town. Keneged sare asarot, which corresponds to the officers of 10 that are mentioned in the Torah. When Yitro was giving Moshe Rabbeinu advice, he said, for every 10 men, appoint a judge. So if I have 230 people in town, and there are 23 judges, for every 10 people in town, I have one judge. Masechet Sanhedrin, Perek Bet Mishnah Aleph. We mentioned the Kohen Gadol at the end of the last Perek. We'll now elaborate on different halachot that apply to the Kohen Gadol. Mishnah says, Kohen Gadol, dan v'danin oto. A Kohen Gadol is allowed to be a judge. He could sit on a bet din, and others are allowed to judge him as well. We bring him to court if there's a need to bring him to court. Nobody is above the law when it comes to the Torah. Me'id u'me'idin oto. He's allowed to testify about others, and others are allowed to give testimony about him. Choletz, he's allowed to do halitza for his brother's widow, His brother passed away, and his brother passed away with no kids. He has to do yibum or halitza. We'll mention that he's only allowed to do halitza. He could free her from the automatic connection that they have once his brother dies by going through the halitza process, where the woman spits towards the brother-in-law and does the whole entire ceremony of halitza. If he passed away with no children, his brothers do halitza with his wife, or they do yibum with his wife. They marry his widow. But unlike a regular kohen, if his brother passes away with no children, since he's the Kohen Gadol, he's not allowed to do Yibum with his brother's widow. He's not allowed to marry his brother's widow because a Kohen Gadol is prohibited to marry anybody who is a almana, who is a widow. Now we'll talk about other halachot where Kohen Gadol is different than a regular Kohen. A regular Kohen is not allowed to become impure by a dead body, but there are exceptions for very close relatives. The 7 Kerovim, a father, mother, brother, an unmarried sister, son, daughter, and wife. If one of those pass away, a regular Kohen is allowed to become impure. But a Kohen Gadol is different. A Kohen Gadol, the Pasuk says, Ve'al kol nafshot met lo yavo. You're not allowed to become impure to any met. Le'aviv ulimo lo itama, to his mother and his father. And we learn all his close relatives as well. He's not allowed to become impure. So we'll talk about now, what does the Kohen Gadol do at a funeral of a close relative? Met lo met, if somebody close to him, a relative, passes away, eno yotze haramita, he's not allowed to go behind the people carrying the coffin all the way to the grave, because he may be so sad about what's going on, he's going to go approach the coffin and violate the isur of becoming tameh. Rather, what happens is when the people are carrying the coffin, when they're hidden from view, he could appear. When they are out there in the open, he hides. In other words, when the people who are carrying the coffin are entering a street and they made a turn, for example, then he's allowed to come up behind them because he won't see the coffin. But once they reappear in his view, he has to wait. He's not allowed to see the coffin. Again, the fact that he's being restricted in some way reminds him that he's not allowed to go touch the coffin and become tameh. Ve'yotzev imahen at petah ha'ir divrei Rabbi Meir. He's only allowed to go till the entrance of the city. Once he reaches the end of the city, he can't continue with them because beyond the city, the whole terrain, the area, there's no streets and there's no alleyways, and therefore he would be unable to hide himself. He would see the coffin at all times. This is the opinion of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yehuda disagrees, and he says the Kohen Gadol is not allowed to be at the funeral at all. He's not allowed to leave the Bet HaMikdash to follow the coffin. Like the Pasuk tells us, if a Kohen Gadol's relative passes away, he's not allowed to leave the Mikdash in order to go to the relative. That's how Rabbi Yehuda understands this pasuk. He understands it literally. Rabbi Meir, who says he's allowed to go to the funeral, but he can't see the coffin, he would say that what it means is min ha-Mikdash lo yetzeh, he can't leave the holy level of the Bet HaMikdash by becoming impure. Now we'll talk about what a Kohen Gadol does when he's dealing with mourners. Ukeshu menachem acharim, when he's comforting those who are in mourning, if somebody passed away, and he doesn't want to mingle with everyone else. Derech kol ha'am ovrin bazeh achar zeh. The custom after the dead person is buried is the mourners stand there and the people pass in front of them one after the other, giving them a little consolation, giving them some kind words. The Kohen Gadol is allowed to attend this type of funeral because we're not nervous that he's going to become tameh. It's not a close relative, it's somebody he knows. So we're not nervous that he's going to become so anxious that he's going to go try and touch the coffin. But we want to make sure that the Kohen Gadol is given the proper kavod. So we just said there's a line of mourners and the line of people who pass right in front of them. So what we do is we try to put the Kohen Gadol in a position that's honorable. And therefore, there's a deputy Kohen Gadol, the replacement of the Kohen Gadol if he becomes impure. So he goes with the Kohen Gadol, mematzeo beno leben ha'am. And he takes the Kohen Gadol and he sort of sandwiches him between himself and the people. We said, just to picture four different lines, the bottom line is the line of mourners. The people pass right in front of them and give them a few words. Above that would be the Kohen Gadol. He would be next to the people. And then on the other side of him would be the second the replacement for the Kohen Gadol. If the Kohen Gadol here is in the middle between the replacement for the Kohen Gadol, his deputy, and the people on the left, it gives honor to the Kohen Gadol. Here we'll talk about what happens when the Kohen Gadol is himself in avelut, in mourning. Ukeshehu mitnahem me'acharim, when he is in mourning and being comforted by others, kol ha'am omrim lo anu kaparatecha. The people tell him, we are your atonement, you should receive a kapara, you should receive forgiveness.
because we accept the suffering that's meant to fall onto you. They're giving him some words of comfort. And he tells them back, you should be blessed from the heavens. When they're giving him the mourner's meal, the se'udat havra'a, which is the first meal after the burial, they give it to him. The rest of the people who were there, they recline on the floor to show that they're also grieving with him. They're part of the suffering with him, and he reclines on a safsal. He sits on a bench because he's the Kohen Gadol. We want to give him honor.